talent is everything. And if you want to have the very best team in the world, you need to be open to employing from anywhere in the world. Really great people are based everywhere. And a lot of really good people want to be employees. So to attract and retain the very best people, offering them secure, stable employment and good benefits makes a whole lot of sense. And you'll see the returns in terms of your business.
You're listening to Mastering Remote, the podcast that gives you expert advice to help you work smarter and manage better remotely. I'm your host, Christine Orchard. Today, I'll be chatting with Dee Coakley, the CEO and co-founder of Boundless. They're a platform that helps you employ international remote team members. Dee has experienced firsthand the operational challenges of setting up a remote team. She spent the last 10 years of her career building B2B SaaS businesses as a three-time COO. We cover when you should hire remote employees versus contractors, why it all matters, and how compliance can actually help your recruiting and retention goals. Let's get started. We're going to jump into the topic of compliance. Now, that might seem like a complex and really intimidating topic for a lot of people out there, but we're going to try to break it down today, make it accessible and easy to understand. How did you get started in this world of compliance and people operations and that whole thing? And why did you decide to start Boundless?
Thanks so much for having me here and taking an interest in this area. I encountered this problem probably gradually throughout my career. My career has led me to this point. It felt almost inevitable that I would found Boundless when I started working on this. I spent 10 years in COO roles with B2B SaaS companies. And during that time, I was always responsible for finance, legal and HR. So I touched on all of these areas. The last company that I was COO at, we ended up with a distributed team very organically. It happened over time. We had people working remotely. We were set up to collaborate and communicate remotely. And our very international team, who were all co-located out of our headquarters in Ireland, started to move back to home countries. Life happens to people and they make decisions to move to new cities. And I then was tasked with figuring out, how the hell do we handle this operationally? And it was so challenging. It just struck me as completely insane that a small business with one person in this country, two people in that country, three people here, that there would be so much heavy lifting involved in doing it the right way. And because of my background in finance and in employment law, I knew enough, although I didn't understand the employment regulations of Germany or Croatia or France, I knew enough to know I was obliged legally to get my head around the employment laws of these countries. And I knew enough to know that I had to process payroll through those countries. You can't simply keep someone on the payroll of the company's HQ country or have them under an employment agreement that's compliant with the terms of that country, but perhaps in conflict with the terms of the country where the person is living. I set about trying to resolve these issues and figure out an easy way to set these people up compliantly. And the truth is, there was no easy way. I started talking to lots of other COOs and they were all saying the same thing. People were tearing their hair out. It literally kept me awake at night. I used to really worry about this. I used to worry about our people that we had in other countries. If we weren't paying into the local tax system for them, did they have the right access to the local social security net? And that was when I started to look into what a good solution might be. And that right. was where the story of Boundless started.
Boundless is an employer of record. So that's one of the solutions to this problem. And maybe we should just define that for people who may not be familiar with that term.
Yeah, sure. Employer of record is the model that we use to support our customers with employing people compliantly in the countries that they're based in. In the US, this will be, you hear the terminology PEO or professional employer organization quite a lot. You'll find lots of different definitions for what these things mean online. They're made up terms, made up by companies. So different companies will define them slightly differently. Professional employer organization describes the organization or the type of company. So Boundless is a PEO. And that's the term that people tend to use in the US. Employer of record is the model often used by PEOs. We as a PEO, the model that we use is employer of record. And the term employer of record gets used to describe the companies in this space more commonly in Europe. What that means is, in Boundless's case, some companies will work through partners to deliver this to customers. For us, we felt really strongly that this is a really sensitive area. It's a compliance product. In our minds, you can't cut corners here. You need to make sure you're delivering quality and you are genuinely delivering full compliance and giving real assurances to the customer. So we own all of our own infrastructure in each of the countries where we support workers. We go through quite a process to get set up for each country. But as the employer of record, we own a local entity. We're registered with the local tax authorities and so on. And that means then that we can act as an employer on our customers' behalf. So customers can get set up to employ someone in a new country in minutes rather than the many, many, many months of pain and hassle that it would usually take.
What would be the other options that, say, a founder who's employing a remote team that's international, what other options do they have if it's not just a PEO or employer of record?
So contracting is where people will often very commonly start. And a lot of smaller early stage companies, they will focus on contractors for early hires. Contracting can work really great. I think most companies, we certainly hire contractors from time to time. Very often you'll have a fixed term project and contracting is absolutely the right way to approach an engagement like that. If someone's with you long term and full time and they're really part of your team, if they have a company email address and they attend your internal meetings, most governments will classify that worker as an employee. The rules for every country are totally different. Some countries you can have people work as contractors for a period of time, sometimes 12 months or 24 months. After that point, they become employees. For some countries, if you are an individual's only client and if they're working for you full time, some governments say from day one, that person is an employee and must be classified as such. So it's worth checking out the requirements in a country. For most businesses, they will choose to start working with an employer of record when one of a couple of things is going on. Perhaps it's really important to them that this individual really feels like a valued member of the team and is afforded all of the rights and benefits that the other workers in the team are being offered. So it can be a recruitment tool, a retention tool. It can be a tool to use to help workers feel really valued. For companies that are a little bit further along, and often companies that have a COO or a head of legal, perhaps they're venture-backed, they're post-Series A companies, or they're prepping for a big venture round or prepping for an exit, compliance starts to become a lot more important for those businesses. So businesses at that kind of stage of development, it's important to them to do things the right way, to be compliant with laws and regulations, and to not be breaking laws and incurring fines and ending up in employment tribunals. So companies at that stage, that's when they start to look at this kind of thing.
Yeah, this is really a tool of retention for a company who's really looking to recruit and retain the best talent.
Absolutely. We hear from a lot of companies. A lot of the companies we talk to will be very established as remote businesses and with distributed teams. And they may have really great working practices around how they communicate and collaborate. And they may be doing everything asynchronously and everyone has flexible working hours. But sometimes they have team members in a number of countries that are contractors. Perhaps they've been with the company for a really long time and everyone else is employed. And they say to us, we feel like we have this two-tier system. And these individuals that are contractors, they feel slightly less valued. There's this slight them and us situation. And for those companies, being able to speak to those workers and say, you know what, we really value you. We want to have you categorized as an employee. We want to pay employer taxes for you. We want to facilitate you paying into your local social security net. We want to pay into your pension. And we want to align the benefits that you get with these other workers that are our employees, perhaps at our HQ country. And that's something that you can do through an employer of record. It's very challenging for a company to do that themselves if they have people in a number of different countries.
Do you have any particular horror stories? I'm sure you've worked with a lot of clients, like maybe reasons that they came to you, things that they were facing before, and they're like, okay, now we really need to get serious about compliance.
It's a real array of problems and challenges. I think it was much less common for governments to put pressure on around compliance in this area until a couple of years ago. Really, 2019 was the year that we started to see a lot of governments issuing fines, approaching companies and saying, we know you have these people working as contractors, they have to be converted to employees. And governments like Serbia, for example, Serbia did a really big publicity campaign around this. They proactively reached out to companies and made it very, very clear that they had a deadline at the start of this year where workers had to be appropriately classified. And Serbia had a really high density of independent contractors, sometimes big teams of independent contractors working for companies based out of other countries, a lot of tech workers. One story, I spoke with a consultant who had to actually fix this problem. He had a client company where a worker of theirs, it was a salesperson, so this person was never based out of the office, they were always remote, a UK company. And this individual moved to Ireland. He married someone in Ireland and moved to Ireland, and he just never mentioned it. Never came up in conversation. They were never forthcoming with the information. Their employer was completely unaware. So the employer obviously kept paying this person through the UK, paying taxes to the UK government. This individual had kids in school in Ireland. They probably had car insurance. They had a life. So eventually the government said, who are you? For 3 years, you know, you're very traceable in this country. You seem to have an income, but we have no record of it. So the company pursued him, rather the government pursued him. So he had to go back to the company and fess up and say where he'd been living. It took about a year for this consultant to unpick this problem. And of course, the company was fined. Fines were imposed. A company can't feign ignorance when it comes to things like this. And with remote workers, of course, it's very difficult to be absolutely certain about where these people are if they're just on the end of a video screen every day. But you as an employer do have an obligation to know where your people are and to comply with the regulations of the territory that they live in and where they're tax resident.
Okay. So Boundless focuses on a few countries. How many countries do you have right now that you cover?
So we're live for 10 right now. Would you like me to list them out?
Yeah, and I'm curious what you have now and then what your plans are and how you decide what countries to focus on.
So right now we support workers in Ireland, the UK, Denmark, Germany, Estonia, Netherlands, Portugal, Singapore, Australia, New Zealand. I think that's the 10. In terms of where we're headed, when we make decisions around the countries that we're going to support, we look at a combination of things. We look at where we're seeing demand from our own customers and people that we're talking to. We look at where we can see there is a density of remote workers or where there are a lot of people moving to. Portugal's always been popular, but this year, Portugal's off the charts. Everyone's moving to Portugal in pandemic times. It's really, really popular. The UK is always hugely popular. But then we also look at where there are particular friction points. If you are a company, it is particularly challenging to employ people in countries like Germany, the Netherlands, France, Italy. So there's demand there, not just based on the number of remote workers that might be there, but because that's their countries of particular challenges. So yeah, we weigh all of those things up. From our side, there are wild variances in how difficult or easy it is for us to get set up in a country and how long it takes us. So there are countries where there's a lot of demand. France is a really good example. We've been working on France for a long time. Admin does not get done quickly in France. It's taking us time. But the most important thing is that we do all of the things that we need to do and put everything in place that we need to ensure full compliance for our customers. So we'll take as long as we need to get set up in a country.
For that whole process, I'm curious, do you have an example like France or another where you can walk us through the big pieces that have to be in place from your end, basically the work you're doing for your clients behind the scenes?
Yeah, sure. I won't walk you through all of the detail most countries, there's anywhere between 75 to maybe 100 different steps that we need to go through. So I won't go through all of that. But at a high level, what we need to do, this stands for pretty much every country, but the process is different for each country and the timelines are different. We register a legal entity, so the equivalent of a limited company, which would be the UK designation, in each of the countries that we enter. We open a local bank account. We register with the local tax authorities. That can be one that takes a really long time. So we register as an employer with the local tax authorities. For some countries, we need to be licensed to do what we do. So we take care of that process. We work with the best local employment lawyers. And we work with employment lawyers who day in, day out are working with companies with lots of knowledge workers, where those companies are really focused on good employee experience and being good employers. So we are not looking for what's the statutory minimum for this country. We're looking for what does it take to be a really great employer and to have employees feel really supported and like they're having a really good employee experience. So we're very selective about the lawyers that we work with. And we'll work with local tax specialists to build out our product around data capture for payroll processing so that we make sure we're set up and running for tax compliance. And then in terms of HR compliance, it's really important that we have very best quality, locally compliant employment agreements. And we produce really detailed country guides. So for our customers, they get a combination of materials, everything from the real detail, but we also distill out the very high level things that they need to focus on and make them really clear for our customers. So there's a lot of work. It takes many, many months before we are real experts in a country and before we've built out our product in the very best possible way and before we have the right materials and information for our customers. And we make sure all of that's in place before we sign up any employees to that country.
So in terms of the hiring process, it sounds like a company can go and recruit whoever they want. Once they find that person they're looking to hire, then they come to you for the actual employment and then the payroll and everything after that.
Yeah. And customers we see fall into a few different categories. One is quite often a company, and often they've made an offer and they contact us and say, this person's starting in 2 weeks' time. I need to sort this out now, which is no problem. We can get people set up. Usually we could do it same day. Usually people want to read an employment agreement, so it'll probably be following day, but we can do it that quickly. That's one type of customer. Another is a company that perhaps has had a lot of people or a few people working as independent contractors for a long time, and they're concerned about compliance, or they want to retain those workers by giving them the best possible experience. So they're converting contractors to employees. And then this year we've seen a new category of customer, a lot of companies getting requests from existing employees to relocate. People are moving all around the world. So we're helping a lot of companies who previously had perhaps taken quite a firm stance that they were not supporting internationally remote, but they found themselves in this situation now where the demand is so strong from their team that it's something they need to support.
You mentioned Portugal, but I was curious if you saw any other interesting countries people are moving out of or other countries that are really popular aside from Portugal.
Portugal is far and away the country that people are moving to most right now. Okay. We have seen a few people moving to Ireland as well. That's something we see quite a bit of. Germany is very, very popular. A lot of our customers' workers are in Germany. And then UK, it tends to be people who are already based in the UK, but most of our customers' workers are based in the UK.
So aside from Singapore, I think you focus most of your attention on Europe. Do you have plans to expand to Asia when you have a lot of, you know, digital nomads and things like that that may be based in this area?
Yeah, we support Australia and New Zealand right now as well. We have plans to launch for China, Japan and the Philippines over the coming months. And we're looking at a host of other Asian countries as well. In terms of other regions, we have really good spread in Europe, and by quite early next year, we'll have very, very good coverage over most of Europe and particularly Eastern Europe. But we are also launching for the US. We're launching for New York and California quite soon, for Canada also. And then a few countries further afield, like South Africa is one that we're looking at. So we will be incredibly busy next year. So in Q1 and Q2 next year, we will have a lot of country launches coming.
A lot of our listeners are founders or hiring managers and maybe small companies or medium-sized companies. What would be your pitch to them if you could just summarize in a sentence or two? Maybe they're still on the fence. Why should they invest in compliance now if it's something that they haven't done?
So the reasons to focus on this are around access to really great talent. Talent is everything, and I think any founder will understand that. And if you want to have the very best team in the world, you need to be open to employing from anywhere in the world. Really great people are based everywhere. And a lot of really good people want to be employees. It can be quite cultural. Some countries, employment is a lot more attractive than contracting for workers. So to attract and retain the very best people, offering them secure, stable employment and good benefits makes a whole lot of sense. And you'll see the returns in terms of your business.
If someone's looking to consider an employer of record, are there certain things that they should look for, things they should be aware of in general when selecting one?
Yeah, so what I would do is I would talk with the company, explain your situation. Quite often you will want to have a conversation with someone. Unless you have a very, very clear-cut situation, you'll probably want to have a conversation. Whoever you're speaking to should be able to answer questions that you have around the employment regulations for the country that you're looking at and the tax regime of the country that you're looking at. They should be very open with information. We are always happy to help people out, offer advice, give guidance. Even if an individual thinks it seems unlikely that they would work with us, we help people out because so often those people come back around later on and we love to hear what problems people are having. So it makes sense for us to talk with people. I would ask about the infrastructure and does this company own the infrastructure that your worker will be employed through? This space has gotten really, really busy. There are a lot of players in this space and a lot of companies are working through partners. What that means is you talk to an individual. They're the person selling to you, but what they're selling to you is owned, managed, and operated by someone else. So when you receive that employment agreement, it will have a third-party company name on there. That means that you have not had any connection with or spoken to the people who will be employing your workers, handling your payroll transactions. I mean, these are big sums of money, and they're responsible for making sure tax filings are done on time and paid to the local tax authority. You need to be able to really, really trust these people. So ask who it is that will be handling that transaction. Whose bank accounts is this money flowing through? Be very, very clear about that. And if anyone you're talking to is not totally clear or if they're a little cagey about that, I'd be quite worried.
So I'm going to finish the conversation with a few lighter questions. People are always curious to know a little bit about you as a person. I will have 6 questions. Don't have to think too hard. It'll be the first thing that comes to your mind. Are you ready? So what is the first thing you do in the morning and the last thing you do at night?
First thing I do in the morning is walk my dog, which I think is really great way to set myself up mentally and psychologically for the day. And then when I sit at my desk, it's planning my day, definitely looking at what it is that I have to do for that day.
As a remote worker, what's your favorite way to take a break?
Walking, getting out in nature, definitely. I was always office-based before the pandemic. Although we are a distributed team, I worked from a co-working space. And I found working from home now during the pandemic, I have a much healthier lifestyle because I get out a lot more during the day. I make a point of going for a walk in a park near my house. And that's transformative. I will never give that up. I won't go back to arriving at the office at 8:39 in the morning and not leaving until 8:30 in the evening. I'm a convert to having some healthy outdoor time during the day.
Who's the most interesting person you follow on Twitter?
Ooh, that's a really good question. Most interesting. I follow a really wide variety of people. I'm really interested in data. I'm a total data geek. So I did start following a lot of data scientists and epidemiologists this year. And I've gotten really into tracking the data around everything. I've always been into data relating to sociological trends and demographics and things like that. So probably the people where I dig into their feeds more are people in that kind of space. And that's been really interesting for me because before my Twitter feed was very business, tech, VCs. And this has brought a much wider variety. Following people in the medical field into my life has given me a much broader.
It's a really good tip to remind people you can learn a lot from people outside of the fields that you're in. Because I think most of our Twitter feeds probably are very one-dimensional in terms of either business or tech or whatever it is. So it's a really good tip. I might have to hit you up after the interview to find some of those specific people who might be interesting to follow.
Yeah, there's a really good, a friend of mine, Gavin Sheridan, has a list that he compiled. He's a journalist. He compiled a list this year of interesting people in that field to follow. So I just followed a lot of the people on his list.
Okay, I'll have to go check that out. I will link it in the show notes if I find that later. Do you have a favorite newsletter? So newsletters have become more and more popular ways to consume information with kind of oversaturation of content out there. So do you have a favorite newsletter?
I find that I don't sign up for many newsletters now because I used to sign up for a lot of newsletters and I would find that I would not read them and they would clog up my inbox. And I found that mentally having this very busy inbox was something I didn't enjoy. I do read Morning Brew I like that just for, again, because it's not just business news. It's a roundup of political news. So I find that one good. Other than that, there's nothing that I follow religiously. I'm a little bit fickle. I will start to read something, read it for a few weeks and then unsubscribe and then subscribe to something else new. Yeah, I think it's hard to keep my attention when it comes to newsletters. It's not my preferred medium of it, engaging with media.
Is there any non-obvious tool that you swear by? It could be for remote work, it could be for productivity, it could just be for life.
Coda, we live really heavily in Coda. I love Coda. So that's where we keep all of our documentation and do a lot of our collaboration. I'm a big fan. I'm getting back into Asana again for managing my time and planning. I do like Asana. I love a good to-do list.
The last question, I want to know, if you were not in the world of business and operations, what job would you love to do?
Well, that's an interesting question because I did have a former life before I moved into tech. I worked in the music industry for 7 years. Yeah, I always worked in marketing and commercial planning roles. So often when I say I worked in the music industry, people say, oh, do you sing? Nobody would ever pay me any money to sing. No, I was definitely in the more commercial end of things. I loved it. I do remember at the time, people who were older than me in the sector saying to me, oh, it's an industry for people in their 20s. You'll probably move on when you're older. And I always thought, no, I'll do this till I retire. This is where I'm meant to be. And I really adored it. But it is an industry for in your 20s. It's a cliche. I left the year I turned 30. A lot of people leave that year. But it was so much fun. I'm so happy that's where I spent my 20s. I have a lot of stories from that time. So yeah, if I was doing anything else, I would probably be working in artist management, I think.
You never know. Life is long. I mean, life is short as well, but life is long and you could have another adventure after this.
Yeah, I don't, you know what? I'm really happy in tech. I have no desire to go back there.
But let's say you've solved the issue of compliance. You're looking for your next adventure. You never know where that will take you.
It's true. It's true. And I'm always open to new things. I think I'm a bit of a chameleon. I think life is for living many lives.
Absolutely. Well, Dee, this has been wonderful. I learned so much from you. I feel like I definitely got to know you over the last half an hour and kind of learn more about compliance, which is a scary issue, but I think you broke it down and you basically convinced me that let someone else handle it, because as a company, you're probably not going to figure it out yourself. Find an employer of record that you trust, someone that's open and transparent. And I think as we move forward into the future of work, I think it's going to be more and more important as things develop.
Thank you so much, Christine. It was an absolute pleasure.
Thanks so much for listening to Mastering Remote, a podcast brought to you by Arc. We make it easy for you to hire senior remote developers, pre-vetted and tailor-matched to you. Check us out at arc.dev. If you enjoyed the conversation today, go ahead and subscribe to be the first to know when our newest episodes of Mastering Remote go live. See you next time.